sometimes when you're really aware still of the limiting habits, it's so hard to break them. You're really aware of them, you know what they are. You know you're not going to find solutions in the fridge, but you're still sometimes really hard to break them.
Yeah, there's that thing of St. Augustine's, isn't there? Why is it that I do that which I would not, and do not do that which I would, or something like that? You know, it's kind of like, knowing it isn't enough, is it? It takes more than that somehow. And that's why, you know, we've kind of got to do the whole business of transforming habits, and transforming habits is it was actually reading a book about transforming habits that started me going to a Buddhist centre, a business management book called The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by a chap called Stephen Covey. And he talks about habits as kind of like being a rope. And you know those huge ropes that you get on ships? And you know ropes are made up of lots of little fibres twisted together. And then a bundle of those are twisted together. And then a bundle of those are twisted together. And he talks about changing habits as replacing each of the fibres in a rope with a piece of silk, you know, with a thread of silk, so that we're gradually refining ourselves. We're still a cable, as it were. But we kind of go from being a steel cable to a rope cable to a silk cable. As we gradually refine our habits, we reorient ourselves.
Having more than one standard response as well, isn't it? It's just giving yourself more possibilities to respond to something that you find a challenge.
Well, in some respects, the challenges are the more difficult place to work, aren't they? I mean, they give the best results, as it were. But it's kind of there's a bit in the Dhammapada, in a very early Buddhist text. It says that the wise man, paraphrasing loosely, the wise person sees the danger in trifling faults. Now, what I take that to mean is that you can relatively easily change things that don't have much emotional weight for yourself, as it were. But if you don't work on that level, as it were, then dealing with the habits of how you relate to your parents, the habits of how you relate to ex-partners, you know, those kind of like the habits of how you relate to your boss or whatever, you know, those difficult things, you're not going to be able to just sort of suddenly change how you relate to somebody if you've been doing it in a particular way for an awfully long time. Unless you've set up a lot of momentum in another in easier contexts, as it were.
Also, would it be that it's not something you just decide to do on an intellectual level? It's you've got a kind of really. I was just thinking about my desperate attempts over many years to give up smoking, and which all failed dismally, apart from the last.
Which was the day before yesterday.
a few years ago. And I just suddenly said, I don't want to smoke anymore. But that came from a much different place than all my previous attempts. And actually, and it wasn't a problem to give up at all. I just did it. I think it took all the other goes and all the other things to actually prepare.
Oh, yeah. There's two things. There's two things that come out of that for me. One is a phrase of Sangharakshita's, who's the chap who founded the movement, the order of which I'm part. And he says that the secret of practicing the Dharma, of living a truly human life, is of finding emotional equivalents for our intellectual understandings. I'll say that again. Finding emotional equivalents for our intellectual understandings. So we all know it's a smart idea to eat less and to exercise more. Do I look like I have an emotional equivalent for that intellectual understanding? No, I don't. Okay, yeah, I'm sure you can find equivalents here. So we all know it's a really smart idea to be kind and generous, friendly. Yeah? Is there anybody in the room who says that's a nerdy idea? Are we very good at it? Not as good as we'd like to be. Yeah, not as good as we'd like to be. So we need to find ways of getting our energies behind, our emotional energies behind that. And there are a whole host of practices for doing that, you know, from the metta bhavana through to the whole business of Buddhist ritual is about cultivating positive emotion. Yeah. The whole reason why we have all these weird figures and things that Colin dislikes so much, you know, it's about total transformation. Yeah, you can't just do it. You can't think your way to enlightenment. The other thing that flagged up was that thing about Edison. You know, it took Edison. Edison was the guy who invented the light bulb, and it took him an awfully large number of goes, like 580, you know, thousands of goes, as it were. And somebody kind of had a bit of a go at him once about, you know, you're a bit crap at inventing this light bulb, before he'd succeeded. And he said, well, no, what I've done is I've developed 587 ways of not inventing a light bulb. Yeah, we have to keep allowing ourselves to make the mistake. Yeah, you know, we kind of keep trying things, and eventually something will give. There's the 100 blow model in Zen, isn't there, about, you know, you hit a rock with a hammer 99 times, you can't see any effect at all, you're just about to give up and go home, and you hit it the last time and boom, falls apart. Yeah. Matt, were you going to say something?
I'll say something, yeah. I was going to say something about what you said about that coming from the heart. I think that's a really good point. And, it made me think of... I used to be much more focused on the intellect as well. And I kind of thought that's where the answers were. That's where I kind of find meaning in my life somehow. But then I guess gradually I've sort of come to realise more and more that, but actually these big kind of questions in life, you know, what's it all about, what are we here for? They're not things that we... intellectually work out, things that come from
somewhere
much deeper than that, I think.
So, yeah, university philosophy departments would be full of enlightened people if you could think your way there. I mean, that doesn't mean that there isn't a key role for the intellect. Yeah, one needs to be clear as well. Yeah. What's interesting is that from what I understand, what I've read about most spiritual traditions, there is a kind of conflict between them, sort of the mystical approach and the intellectual approach, as it were, the cognitive approach. But the cognitive approach is an entirely valid one, but it gets you a certain distance, and people often then move into a mystical phase from the understanding they've developed through a sort of cognitive approach. That may or may not mean anything to you, but basically... it's another one of these things where we can, you know, you get it a lot in the New Age, where you get people sort of saying, oh, well, I've got to tell you, didn't I? You get people who sort of want to... You have to go beyond the intellect, that's the point. You can't just dump the intellect. Yeah, and just kind of like feel your way to enlightenment. That isn't going to work either. Yeah. You need to have the two working in tandem in a way. In a way, actually, what you need to do is transcend the polarity, you know, the distinction between the two. You need the heart and the mind working in harmony. My name's a bit, well, one of my interpretations of my name is a bit like that, really. Because my name, Jnana, means wisdom or knowledge. It's the opposite of Vijnana, yeah, that I was talking about before, dualistic awareness. It's sort of consciousness that's kind of sees things completely clearly. And Garbha literally means womb, as in what babies come from, although it's usually translated as matrix nowadays. Hopefully better than the sequels. And I sometimes kind of see that's kind of like part of my life's about, my spiritual practice is about kind of integrating the visceral with the, with you know, what's, you know, the smarts, as it were, kind of moving them right down to here. Does that make sense to people? Yeah, it's kind of... Yeah, I hated it when I was given it. And one of the reasons I didn't like it was because of the jnana thing, and I thought I wanted to be all spiritual. I didn't want it to be about the intellect, and then, you know, because I'd kind of... Yeah, I was quite bright, and I tended to over-rely on that before I was a Buddhist. Maybe I still do. And it was a very strong teaching for me that I couldn't... Basically, it was, you know, my name, being given this name, was making exactly that point to me, in a way, you know. You can't just pretend not to have your intellect and do spiritual. You know, it's kind of like it has to be transformed. It has to be, you know, a tool to use, that you work with, that you integrate, you know, that you bring those different parts of yourself together.
Who gave you the name?
A chap called Surita. He's a, what's called a... When you're ordained, you have a private ordination and a public ordination, and your private preceptor is the person who chooses your name. So they're always a very experienced order member, so someone's been an ordained a lot longer than you, and somebody who's known you and helped you to prepare for ordination, so knows you. Often in a way, given that they've got more experience of the spiritual path than you, they often know you in ways that you don't know yourself, you know, so they can kind of see, you know, what your essence is in a way, and kind of your name kind of sums up. Your name always sums up kind of, you know, what you need to work on as well as what your qualities are.
It seems to sum up that you're wise and caring, or perhaps you need to be wise and caring. Is that too simplified of what I've just understood?
One of the reasons I was given my name was a teaching not to be a smartass. The simple translation of my name is filled with knowledge, which is my least favourite one, and one I only occasionally admit to. Partly because I've got a very good memory, and my preceptor always thought I was an encyclopedia. But it's also, yeah, don't be a smartass. Being a smartass is no fun, really. So it's kind of like a... Yeah, there's an awful lot I could say about my name in a way. I could probably do a whole course on my name, because each of the two parts relates to a whole school of Buddhist philosophy, which would take quite a long time to explain now. Even if I was capable of it, it would take a long time.
Isn't wisdom different to knowledge?
Oh, yeah. Would you like to say how?
isn't wisdom something? Knowledge is just kind of like a mental, like, is a mental kind of thing, whereas wisdom is a kind of more holistic.
In Buddhism, there are said to be three levels of wisdom, and you work through them, as it were. The first level of wisdom is called Shrutamaya Prajna, which means the wisdom of hearing, literally. So bear in mind that Buddhism is an oral tradition. So what happened in the first... Well, I suppose we're doing the same thing here, isn't it? It's kind of like, this is the wisdom of having heard something. Yeah, so you guys sitting here, what you remember from what you hear this evening, or what you've read, yeah, that's Shrutamaya Prajna. That's the kind of I tend to think of it being this level of wisdom, knowledge. I tend to think of it as being, yeah. So stuff that you know, cognitively, as it were. And then the next is Chintamaya Prajna. I don't know how to translate chinta in this context. It means chinta is an element of mind, I think. I tend to associate this with here, as it were. This is when you kind of have a real feeling for something, when you understand something to the extent that you've kind of got an emotional connection with it. Yeah? Does that make sense? You kind of, you know, there's some... You can tell the difference when somebody's just repeating something they know and when somebody's communicating something they feel, can't you? Yeah? Does that make sense to you? You're familiar with that? So that's Chintamaya Prajna, that's kind of how I see it. And then the next level is Bhavanamaya Prajna, which Bhavana is this word that means becoming, as in the Metta Bhavana. So this is the knowledge, the wisdom of becoming, as it were. So this is when you and that wisdom are completely non-different. Yeah. So there's no difference between you and that. You are just an expression of that wisdom, in a way, how you are in the world. And so I associate this with, you know, right down in the gut. Listening, reflecting, meditating is sometimes how they're referred to a lot in the Tibetan tradition. You're like popping up a lot, that little threesome. Listening, reflecting, meditating.
That's your mind, your heart and your body again, isn't it?
That's our way I describe it. That's not a traditional way, I would like to emphasise. It's just a way I understand it.